Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. For the past 40 years, the U.S. Geological Survey and NASA have teamed up to capture images of Earth through a series of Landsat satellites. The images record global changes and are used in agriculture, forestry, geology, and many other applications. The next satellite, Landsat 8, is scheduled for launch in February, and two SDSU professors are members of the new Landsat 8 science team. Dennis Helder is Associate Dean for Research at the SDSU College of Engineering, and he joins us. Professor Helder, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Carl.
Also with us is David Roy, Senior Scientist at the Geographic Information Science Center for Excellence. Professor Roy, thanks for your time as well.
Hi, Carl, thanks.
How long have both of you been working with Landsat?
I think I began working with Landsat, Carl, back in 1988 when a new instrument at that time called the Landsat 5 Thematic Mapper was launched, and it had an unusual noise pattern in it that I worked on for my dissertation defense.
What do you mean by a noise pattern?
Well, the images came down to Earth with stripes in them, and so we were able to look at that and determine what in the instrument was causing the stripes, and then we were able to find a correction for it and remove it from the imagery.
Professor Roy, when did you first get involved?
With the Landsat Science Team, I got involved about 6 years ago. I have a NASA-funded project to manipulate large amounts of Landsat data. In 2008, the USGS, United States Geological Survey, and NASA made Landsat data free. Prior to that, it would cost users anything between $600 and $2,000 for a Landsat image, which is a piece of land about 180 by 180 kilometers wide. So prior to about 2008, I wasn't using a great deal of Landsat data because it was expensive. Now it's free. I'm using a lot of it, and so are my students.
So this is an important change for everyone that this is now free.
Yes, very much so.
How many members of the science team are there?
I think there's right at a dozen with this team, Carl. And they're both from the U.S., and there's a couple of international members as well.
So, Professor Helder, what is your work now as a member of this team?
I guess the main objective I have is to ensure the accurate calibration of the instrument and the imagery that it provides so that it can be used not only for pretty pictures, but it can be used as a data set that then allows scientists like Dr. Roy to use the data and extract useful information from it, such as drought stress and deforestation and green up in Africa.
So what is the process of calibrating images? How does that work?
Well, on the one hand, Carl, it's as simple as just finding a value for the gain of the instrument, which is the number that we convert the digital numbers that are sent down to Earth into physical units of energy. But the techniques to define that number accurately and consistently get to be very difficult. When we started with the Landsat program, we were hoping to be accurate to within about 10%. And today we feel like we're accurate to about 3%, and our current goal is to get that down to 2%.
So, Professor Roy, Professor Helder works and others calibrate the images from the satellite, then I think you touched on this a little bit, but what do you do with those images? What happens?
Well, I hoover up every single Landsat image I can get my hands on. As long as it's been calibrated by Professor Helder, I can use it. Otherwise, as Dennis said, it's just an image, just a pretty picture. I then manipulate those data sets into something that looks a bit like Google Maps. But the difference between Google Maps and what I do is that I can go back in time. And so users eventually can point on a website to any location in the United States or Alaska, and they get all the information in time, so they can look at the last 10 years at a single location on the Earth's surface. For example, if they want to look at how green a field is in the last 10 years, they can see a time series plot of that information.
So who all uses this data?
Most of the people that use the Landsat data have traditionally been universities. Now that the data is free, the user base has expanded tremendously. Last year, USGS distributed millions of scenes around the world. there was a survey done by a consultancy that suggested that the worth of this data to the commercial sector was $7.5 billion. I think that was the number. So the user base is quite extraordinary. It's really, really very broad. Anything from scientists looking at the changing pattern of distribution of people on the surface and climate change to people that are doing urban planning and farmers.
Do you work directly with people, or you just make the data available for them?
I mainly make the data available to the user base.
Mm-hmm. Professor Helder, I think you touched on this a little bit as well. The changes in Landsat satellites, what do you expect with the new one that launches in February, Landsat 8?
Well, Carl, it'll clearly be the most advanced instrument in the Landsat series. It'll have a better capability to resolve the features on the Earth's surface in several different ways. It doesn't mean that the pixel sizes are smaller. It's still basically a system where each pixel represents about 30 meters on the ground, but we can resolve the amount of energy coming up from the surface much more accurately than we could with any of the previous Landsat instruments. And as we talked about earlier on, the noise level will be far superior to the previous instruments, so the users will be able to use that data and resolve much more information from the images than they could previously. We've also refined the what we call the spectral bands so that the information that is used by the scientists will be affected a little bit less by the atmosphere, and they can get a truer picture of the Earth's surface that way rather than how the surface appears at the top of the atmosphere where the satellite is looking at it.
So is this a pretty exciting time?
It'll be really exciting on February 12th, the day after launch. Then we'll get to start working with the instrument and see what it's really able to produce.
And you'll be at the launch, or you're making plans to be at the launch?
Yep, we sure are.
Yeah, Professor Roy?
Yes, absolutely. I'm trying to get some of my postdocs to come with me. I think it's going to be very interesting.
So you haven't been to the other launches?
I haven't. I worked on another NASA instrument called MODIS, and I, instead of going to the launch of that in 1999, I chose to stay in my office and work. And I can't remember what I was working on, but I'm sure I would have remembered if I'd actually gone to the launch. So this time around, I'm actually going to try and go.
So you're going to make sure.
Yeah.
Well, for you personally, both of you, we'll start with you, Professor Helder. What does it mean for you to be involved with a project of this magnitude?
I think one of the exciting aspects for me is to be involved with the space program at some level. That was a dream I had when I was a youngster watching the Apollo missions. But from a more pragmatic point of view, I get to work with some of the top people in the country, and if not the world over, that know about how satellites work, how they're calibrated, and how we can make the most use of the data. So it's an invigorating climate from a intellectual point of view, and even better than that, the people I get to work with are really genuinely good people and are out there trying to make a difference in the world. So it's a fun opportunity from that perspective.
You mentioned the Apollo missions. Do you find that these days that there are still similar things, similar space projects that get younger generations, people like you when you were growing up, that get them excited and want to get involved in things like this?
Well, I hope that we can somehow stimulate our children to be excited about the opportunities that we have in working with the space program. It's certainly a different world in the sense that the manned space flight is much less of a activity than it was when I was growing up, but the information and the understanding that we're able to glean from studying the Earth from space is far, far greater today than it ever was when I was a youngster growing up myself.
Well, Professor Roy, what was it like, or what is it like for you to be involved in this project?
It's as Dennis said, it's all of the above. Going to the question about the engaging younger people, I think the stuff that NASA's been doing in Mars, observing Mars, has been really interesting. And one of the issues is that the observation of the Earth is equally important, given that Landsat data started coming online in 1972. And that's since then, the population has more than doubled of the planet. And there's evidence now increasingly for some effect of the climate on the Earth's surface. So using this particular satellite data, Landsat, it's really perfect for looking at those kind of things, the effect of people on the Earth's surface, and also the relationships with climate change. So I'm very much interested in being involved in that process because I think it's very important. You talk about children. I think for my kids' kids, I'd like to see that the Landsat continues. And one of the things that the science team will have to do is demonstrate that it's worth doing. It's worth a considerable investment from the federal government to continue the Landsat program.
Do you find that that's a problem to convince people that this is important?
The issue is that we're in a climate of reduced funding in the sciences, and there's always the temptation to take money away from a program and give it to something else. So, yeah, the next Landsat after this one, its status, I'm unclear of whether that's guaranteed or not. So when this satellite launches, we need another one. We need to continue the long-term data record of this data back from 1972. If the satellites aren't up there to collect the data, the maps of the Earth's surface, then we have a gap, and you can't fill it after the event.
Are there other programs elsewhere in the world that do things similar to Landsat?
Yes, there are, but not as well, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a variety of other satellites out there, but none of them have the capabilities of a Landsat-style instrument in terms of continuous coverage, in terms of signal-to-noise, and in terms of spectral coverage, the different wavelengths of light that they can receive. And as David said, the huge value in the mission is the data record going back to 72. It's the only one available. And so we have this one opportunity to continue it, and Landsat's the way to get the job done.
Well, Professor Helder, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
You're very welcome.
And thank Professor you. Roy, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
Dennis Helder is Associate Dean for Research at South Dakota State University's College of Engineering, and David Roy is Senior Scientist at the Geographic Information Science Center for Excellence. They're both members of the Landsat 8 science team, and Landsat 8 is scheduled for a launch in February, and that takes place at February 11th at the Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. And as you just heard, Helder and Roy plan to be there.